Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. This is Jessica Trotter, and it's just Cheryl Lindemann and I starting off the pod today.
Hello.
Mari will follow up in our second segment with a talk with two of our outstanding youth librarians, Tom Schultz and Lindsay Anderson. And they're going to be talking about like the best, their top children's picks, children's and teen picks for 2019. And so that's going to be coming up next. Something else fun, the Mid-Michigan Women's Expo will be at the Lansing Center Friday, February 7th through Sunday, February 9th. So keep listening to this episode for a chance to win a pair of tickets that can be used for a date of your choice. And just so you know, we're going to be there. We're going to do a podcast on Friday. So hope you will come out and maybe see us.
Yeah, live podcast.
Yes, this will be interesting and a first for us.
Mm-hmm.
So... But to get back into our plans for today's pod, we talked last month about how we read and and you know, making plans and goals for new years if we wanted to do that. So where did you land, Cheryl?
Yeah, it's been going pretty well so far.
Yes,
going pretty well. I started the year off with reading an excellent book, and then had that situation that we talked about in the last podcast where there was the second book that I thought I was going to read and started right out into that one, got about 50 pages in and said, you know, I've made it to 50 and I think that's it on this one. Had to move to another one.
Yep.
And it was funny because we came back from that weekend and we both discussed that you'd had the same experience, hadn't you?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have these grand plans and I maybe picked up 5 different books, but they just weren't the right book for that time.
Yeah.
And then I unfortunately found the perfect book at about way too late into the evening on Sunday night. And then all I wanted to do until the end of that book was read that book, not, you know, go to bed or, you know, get up Monday morning and go to work.
Right.
I really would prefer have just stayed and read that book.
Exactly.
And it was hard because you had that whole weekend where I was thinking, I'm going to read.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't find the right one.
I understand.
So goals?
Yeah, on reading goals for this year, we talked last month about the reading journal, and my number one goal is to keep up with that because I've been so happy that I've had that. I've been able to look back. You think you're going to remember what you've read. It's really hard to remember. So that reading journal is definitely one of keeping up with that is one of my goals. Keeping up with the morning reading and the night reading. I find that morning reading is just a really great way to start the day. And then one of my other goals is sort of a topical reading goal. I definitely want to read quite a bit about biodiversity, about climate, about ecosystems. And that's a specific science reading goal that I have for this year, is to really deep dive into those topics.
Okay. I have a couple of, I'm the person that had the kind of never-ending spreadsheet with like numbers of what I've read and things like that. So one of the things I came away from out of 2019 is I'd read, which is good for me, I'd read about 40%, 47% diverse authors, and I'd like to kind of push myself and see if I can get to 50%. I think that's just kind of a nice, whether I get there or not, it's a nice goal to have.
Yeah.
I still think I've at least started on the Book Riot's Read Harder Challenge for 2020. Mm-hmm. There's some really hard topics in it, so I will see where I go, but I have started it. And then I also want to read more ARCs, which is sort of getting their advanced reading copies that we get. That, you know, booksellers and librarians both get to sort of know what's coming up and be able to pitch books to our members. And I just want to get ahead a little, and we'll see whether that actually happens. There's so many books and so little time. But I will say, because we did bring up the expo, Cheryl and I are planning to kind of bring a few and, you know, have them for giveaways at the expo too. So just as another little perk if you want to come out and see us.
Yep, free books at the expo. Absolutely.
Related reading goals, but not exactly the same thing. January resolutions, resets, that sort of thing. We decided to kind of talk about like lifestyle books you want to kind of start?
Sure, I'd love to. Lifestyle books, such a big topic area. We could get into diet, exercise, self-help runs the gamut, and there's so much that's actually coming out right now, new in our libraries. And I bet if you go to any of our branches, you'd see some great New Year displays with some excellent titles on them, and even some in our
selections.
We have a really nice list.
There's a couple of lists going right now, including new cookbooks or healthy eating type things, or the first one I put up had to do with whether you want to do resolutions or not. These are just all good books.
Yeah. I've been seeing that as a topic a lot lately, is to have resolutions or not.
Exactly.
Very, very,
exactly.
Really up to the individual. A couple books that are lifestyle oriented that I'm really looking forward to, but I haven't read yet. One I'm still on hold for is Adam Mintner's Secondhand Travels in the New Global Garage Sale. And that is one that you may have heard about, and it's something that I cannot wait to get my hands on. And then I just received my hold of Daniel Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson's The Power of Showing Up, How Parental Presence Shapes Who Our Kids Become and How Their Brains Get Wired. And this team is the author duo who brought The Whole Brain Child and a good number of other excellent parenting titles. And so this should be an excellent read. I was also looking back at lifestyle books that have really stayed with me. And it's one that I read in 1998. It's been a while. And I remember it so clearly. And I still use the principles from it. It's Julia Morgenstern's Organizing from the Inside Out, The Foolproof System for Organizing Your Home, Your Office, and Your Life. And again, this came out in 1998. The principles are so solid that you can use them today. This is not this has aged very well. And what this book does is really breaks organizing down into something that absolutely everybody can do. It's really clear, and it has to do with the word zones. And I think a lot of authors used zones after this book. Maybe some used before and I didn't know. But I hadn't heard of zones until this book. And then you hear about zones used in a different way, but she literally uses the word zones, and you take anything that you're trying to organize and break it up into how do you use the space, and then you need space within that space for each item or each type of item that you're going to use, or each activity that you're going to engage in the space needs a place for the items to live. And if you don't have that, you'll continually have a mess.
Right.
And so once I got that, even though I sort of love organizing books, and I think I've read almost all of them, but this one is the one before Marie Kondo's book that's very famous and popular now. This is the one that has stuck with me the most and has been the most useful. And I still use it, especially in a new home, a new library, a new job, a new office. I think about the zones first. So it's just a fantastic book. There's even a DVD that's come out of this book. Another author that I really enjoy reading is Gretchen Rubin. She has a number of books, The Happiness Project, Happier at Home. She has an organizing book that came out in the last couple years. My favorite of her books is Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives. And what this book does is, again, it takes the concept of habits and breaks them down and talks about how if we can make things habits, then it'll improve the way we do so many things in our life. And it's fun, it's readable, it's smart, it's interesting. It's just a really great read. And I think Gretchen Rubin, her books are rather popular, and it's because she makes the topic fun. And what she's really concerned with is, how do we live out our days? How do we live out our lives? And she focuses her books on that. So I highly recommend Better Than Before or any of Gretchen Rubin's books.
Okay. Well, I also want to kind of reach back on something, and I think you've looked at this too.
Yes.
A book that I go back to and have gotten different things out of it kind of every time I've gone back to it is more of an inspirational set of interviews. It's called In the Company of Women, Inspiration and Advice from Over 100 Makers, Artists, and Entrepreneurs by Grace Bonney. It's just a beautiful book. They go in. They interviewed all of these women. They look at their spaces where they create. They look at things that inspire them. Cheryl was talking about looking at their shoes. It's a colorful book.
Their posters.
Their posters, yes. Sometimes it's showing what things that they've designed, but it's really looking at what they've designed for themselves as they interview them. And there are quotes that have stuck with me. It includes interviews with Issa Rae, Janet Mock, Genevieve Gorder, who's did Dear Genevieve on HGTV. It's a real range of professions, but all creating in some way. It came out just the first sort of win. Just as Roxane Gay was coming to my attention, she's also one of the people interviewed. Carrie Bronstein's in it. But, you know, as I was looking back at it again, just like getting ready for this podcast, I didn't realize there's an interview with Lizzo before, you know. Yeah. I want to go back and like read it more in depth now because, I wasn't aware of her at the time. So now going back and having just really fallen for her music this summer, and working back, this was a surprise to me, and it was really cool to kind of go back and look at it. But it's asking them about things that are important to them, things they would have told themselves to do differently or not to do differently, or what their working space needs to be like. It's just one of those things, and I've taken things out of it and applied to my spaces, or just things to keep in my mind about how I approach my job or how I approach my life. It's just been an interesting, inspirational title for me.
Yeah, and I think one of the most fun things about that book is what Jessica mentioned, that you go back and you say, oh, I didn't know this person was in this book.
Totally. Like
Carson Ellis, illustrator of The Shortest Day, which has been a great book from 2019, children's book. Myra mm-hmm. Kalman, who has done so many beautiful books for adults and children, mm-hmm. Really runs the range. And it's fun to go back and rediscover some of the people in there.
And it's like, it's architects, it's ceramics people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a full range of people, and it is very interesting to look at their different approaches to creativity. And I don't necessarily mean like this only applies to makers. It's really whatever you have creativity in whatever your job is, and it can be applied kind of across the board. So it isn't something that's only it's not something that's only for women mm-hmm. or only for makers or anything like that. It's just a lot of really interesting points of view.
Inspiring.
A couple of more recent books that I'd kind of throw in here. Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative. I do actually tend towards those books that are appealing to creative types. This is Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad by Austin Kleon. He had a couple of other bestsellers. This is sort of part of a series. First one was Steal Like an Artist, and another one is Show Your Work. But this one is actually, again, not just for creatives, but it's kind of offers solid advice on staying creative and keeping your passion for whatever you know. It can be applied across life through work, mm-hmm. Just when you're trying to avoid burnout in whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyone who finds themselves sort of trying to figure out how to maintain their passion and drive for something, it's just a nice book. He is an artist. He is a cartoonist. So it's kind of a mix of words and graphics.
Nice.
And it's just a nice, it's a gift style book, too. Mm-hmm. So it's just one that I would suggest, and I would suggest any of his. And I will, just as a quick throw out there, and again, for me, I tend towards the inspirational or, you know, things that get me thinking about how to apply this to my life. Mm-hmm. I just actually finished Michelle Obama's Becoming, which is an absolutely fabulous audiobook. And it's just one of those memoirs that it's a strong woman talking about how she got where she is today. Mm-hmm. It talks about the mistakes she's made, but also the ways things that she's done have been twisted in popular media. So it's an interesting book, and mm-hmm. That family is just very interesting in how they've approached things. She was totally against him running for office. She did not think he should be in politics, and that's a big turnaround to First Lady. So it's an interesting story, and I came out of it with, you know, ideas of how to be a little bit more assertive and attentive to myself and my family versus mm-hmm. the job and things like that. So it was interesting
that
way.
Excellent. Another one that I have come back to, it's a couple years old now, is Haman Sunim's The Things You Can See Only When You Slow Down, Finding Calm and Inner Wisdom Amid the Demands of Daily Life. And Sunim is a Zen Buddhist teacher. This is one of those books, again, like one of the ones that Jessica just talked about, that it's really complemented by the illustrations inside of the book. They're really short, beautiful little passages, very quiet, understated. They get to the heart of things really quickly. This is one of those books, if you only have a couple minutes before you fall asleep at night to read, this is a great one to pick up. He is a master at instilling a lot into each sentence. So you get a lot out of the book with a really low time and reading investment. And the illustrations are gorgeous. They're by a Korean artist, Yongchul Lee, and they're otherworldly. They focus on trees, people, clouds, people meeting across a cloud landscape, people in a park and little boats. And it's just a beautiful book. Again, a book you could really give as a gift to somebody. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely lovely. It's a really enjoyable book, and it's not overtly self-help necessarily, but it's just nice, especially good for this time of year. It's a lot about accepting and not necessarily changing.
So kind of turning out of lifestyles for a minute, you actually had another thing you wanted to talk about. We had something special happen at Potter Park in the holidays?
Yes, Christmas Eve. We are so fortunate to live in Lansing because we had the black rhino calf born at Potter Park Zoo. And this week, his name was voted on by Lansing area residents. And Jolly is the name of our very own Lansing black rhino. And this really made me think about rhinoceros in general. I really love them. And a book that I absolutely love from a couple years ago, it's by Emily Arnold McCulley. And Emily Arnold McCulley is a Caldecott Medal Award-winning artist and illustrator. And this was a book called Clara, the mostly true story of the rhinoceros who dazzled kings, inspired artists, and won the hearts of everyone while she ate her way up and down a continent. And this is a true story about Clara. And Clara was born in 1738. She lived 20 years, which was a long time at that time for a rhinoceros to live in captivity. And she was orphaned and taken in by Jan Albert Seichterman, a director of the Dutch East India Company. And she toured Europe.
Wow.
She toured all over Europe. Yeah, yes. It's an incredible true story. And she actually sparked a case of rhinomania all through Europe. And this most significant part of the story to me is that people really feared rhinos at the time. And after Clara touring, people did not fear them as much, and they were awed by her gentleness. Everything depicted rhinos as these terrible, terrifying beasts who would gorge you with the horn, basically. And so this is a really, I don't want to say it's an animal rights story, because it really isn't. I mean, she was going on tour through Europe.
Right.
But it's a story about seeing sort of the sentience or seeing an animal in a different way. And these are the sort of breakthroughs that really have happened to help us see animals differently. So that is, it's a moving story because she really formed a very strong bond with her owner and made just such a difference for rhinos at that time. And so it's just a fun book. It's a beautiful story, gorgeous illustrations, and again, based on a true story. So it's one I really recommend.
Okay. And before we go, I thought we'd both finish up on maybe where we're headed next.
Yeah, sounds good.
I can say for me, I'm currently reading an advanced reading copy of a debut novel called Lakewood. You'll probably hear more about it later because I'm not done yet and I haven't formed a strong opinion about where I'm going with it. But it's something that's due out in March. Caught my eye because it's set in Michigan. And one of the topics it's looking at is kind of how it's sort of playing off in the news stuff about Henrietta Lacks and the Tuskegee experiment. It's how black bodies have been used in experimentation. So it's contemporary, slightly dystopic in that something's going on. in the community. So I'm looking forward to finishing it and see where it goes.
Michigan author as well?
Michigan okay. author as well, though yeah. I think she currently lives in Michigan. She either went to school in Michigan or is okay. from, she actually might be from Michigan.
Okay.
She's currently in Indiana.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
But it's sort of like, I think it's meant to be sort of a Dow area okay. kind of setting.
Wow.
So I think it's going to be heavy, but it's interesting how it started off so far.
Okay, very good.
So what are you reading?
I am reading One Long River of Song, Notes on Wonder by Brian Doyle. And Doyle passed away in 2017 from complications from a brain tumor, and he was an author of 7 novels, 6 books of poetry, and 13 essay collections. He was also the editor of Portland Magazine. However, we haven't heard that much about him. And so this book pulls together a huge number of his essays. They touch on all aspects of life, from especially nature, family, religion, and it's really a highly acclaimed book, and so far, just beautiful. So it's been a great read. Start the year off with.
Cool. All right. We'll see you next month, and stay tuned for the next segment. As I mentioned earlier, the Mid-Michigan's Women's Expo will be at the Lansing Center February 7th through 9th. It'll feature a presentation by Mari, Cheryl, and myself on February 7th at 2 p.m. and presentations by speed painter Evan Stock on February 8th. For more information about the expo, click on the link in the episode description. But first, we would like to give you an opportunity to win one of our 10 pair of free tickets. Just email the word road trip along with your contact information to connect@cadl.org. Again, email the word road trip to connect@cadl.org. We will need your email by midnight on January 26th, and you must be a Cadl member. Good luck.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. This is Marisol Garza with Capillary District Libraries. I am here today with Youth Services Librarian Tom Schultz from our Okemos branch and Lindsay Anderson from our Mason branch. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Today, we are going to be talking about some of our favorite J books or kids books from 2019. And before we get started, I just wanted to ask a little bit about Tom. What are some of the programming that you do at Okemos?
Well, we do a whole range of story times. A program I'm particularly proud of, though, is our Homeschool Discoveries program. It's been going on several years now for, early elementary kids. Lots of fun. Twice a month we meet, so that's very fun.
Okay. How about you, Lindsay? What are the kind of programs you do at Mason?
We do a slew of story times. Probably my favorite is Movers and Readers, which is toddlers.
I remember that one.
Yes, we have a lot of fun. I play the ukulele. We do a lot of moving around and rhymes and songs and some stories, and it's a blast.
Great. Well, I am the youth selector here. I pick a lot of great books. I love being able to see them. And we're going to go ahead and get started with some of our favorite picture books of 2019. Anyone got anything?
I could start out with one that I really like. Now, 2019, this was the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 13 moon landing. So there was a lot of space books and rocket books and things like this coming out this last year. And one very cool picture book, it's called Rocket Says Look Up. And it's about this little girl. She's really into space. She's really into rocketry. She wears this orange jumpsuit everywhere, so she looks like a shuttle astronaut. And there's going to be a meteor shower in her town. And she's really excited about it. She wants to tell everybody about the meteor shower. But when she goes around her town to tell people about it, her mom makes her take her big brother. And her big brother's there with his phone the whole time. Guy won't look up. He's playing on his phone the whole time. Won't do anything else. Until finally, she gets him out there with the meteor shower. And guess what? He finally looks up. Cute illustrations. It's just a lot of fun. One other I'd mention is called How Do You Dance by Thyra Hader. I think it's pronounced H-E-D-E-R. And this is really a good one for story times because it basically tells us there's dancing in every one of us. We can dance in different ways, all ages of people, all sizes of people, all shapes of people. Everybody's got the dance. Everybody can do the dance, right? So those are a couple I really like.
Okay, I really like that one too.
Yeah.
How Do You Dance? Lindsay, what did you like on, as far as picture books this year?
So one of my favorite, I hate having to pick favorites, but these are definitely some of
Well, you're a story timer. We don't play favorites in story time.
Right. But one of the books that came out last year that I really enjoyed, it's called Around the Table That Granddad Built. And this picture book is so lovely. So the story is basically a multi-generational family creating this meal together. And the style is, so it's written in a cumulative tale or chain tale style. And so it's basically a throwback to the old nursery rhyme, "This is the house that Jack built."
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and so a contemporary example of this would be, "There was an old lady who swallowed a fly." So these are the kind of tales where the text really builds on itself. And I don't know about you guys, but some of those, by the end, I'm so exhausted.
I know. Yeah. The amount of words. Especially if you're doing it in front of an audience.
Yes. So what I love about this one, though, is toward the middle of the story, it actually just abandons that style and starts to list all of the foods that this family is making together. And it still rhymes, but it's just so much fun. And yeah, so one of the themes of this book is the diversity of the family. And I love the fact that it's never actually directly commented on. It's just reflected in the illustrations.
Nice.
And it's just a beautiful, it's a beautiful story. And the illustrations are so bright and happy. So yeah, that's one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites from last year is a book called Bear Came Along. It's written by Richard Morris and illustrated by Lei Win Pham. And this one is so fun. So again, I shouldn't speak for you guys, but sometimes my
favorite... You do on this one, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes my favorite picture books don't necessarily translate into good story time read-alouds.
Yes, I can relate to that.
Right, but this one does. It is so fun. It's about this bear who goes on an adventure down this river, and as he floats along on this log, he's joined by more and more animals, and the best moment of the book is they run into this flock of ducks, and then they're about to go over this waterfall, and the expressions on their faces are so hilarious. Right. But yeah, it's such a beautiful book, and it's got these wonderful themes of friendship and unexpected places, just kind of the collaborative nature of the world, and also just this idea that we're all floating along on this journey together.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah. And we each bring something different to the table. One of us can be a leader. Another of us is more leisurely, so on and so on. All of us.
Yeah.
Plus, Lei Win Pham is one of the very best children's book illustrators out there right now. She can do funny. She can do serious. She can do playful. She can do everything.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, the wordless pages where they're about to go over the waterfall are my favorite.
Okay.
The expressions are so great, yeah. Cool. So yeah, cool. Those are some of my favorites.
Well, I have another bear book, I guess you could say. There Are No Bears in This Bakery. This is by Julia Sarcone Roach. And this story actually is primarily about a little cat named Whiskers. And the reason actually named Muffin, who has whiskers that are quite prominent in the story. But the reason I really like this one is because this is like one of the few picture books that I have seen that really lends itself to like being a picture book mystery. I mean, you can just feel the like da-da-da, you know, in the illustrations and the pages. And it's about Muffin, who is, you know, kind of like the caretaker of the neighborhood and the bakery, and he goes out late at night and he recognizes that there's someone in the bakery. And lo and behold, little by little, he starts to see that it's a bear who's gotten in, a baby bear who's gotten into the pastries. And there, you know, there's a little bit of a mess going. And like at every time you turn the page, there's like a new part of the mystery that's revealed. And towards the very end, you get to see the mama bear come in too. And I mean, each time there's like this little bit of suspense, like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? And what I found, I feel like I don't want to give it totally away, but there's this scene where the cat is like all of a sudden in darkness. And I'll let you figure out what happens, but it is just adorable. And the two bears and the cat, they end up, you know, sort of really becoming friends. And the cat goes back home, back to bed. And it's funny because the cat's like waking up its owner saying, it's time to get up, get out, you know, it's time for my pillow. And the bakery owner comes in and just like, what's happened? There's this big mess here in the bakery, but very, very cute mystery.
So in other words, it's a great time to be alive if you like cute bear books. But it's not just these, You guys remember like The Bear Ate Your Sandwich?
Yeah.
And there's the ones where the bear's like, he's getting pulled up into outer space. I don't remember the name of that one. But the last few years, tons of cute bear books.
So true.
Definitely. And this one, I would say actually would make a good story time read if you can, because it's long enough that you can like sort of space it out. And also, I remember running into a lot of parents who would be asked to go in during March's Reading Month to be like the mystery reader in classrooms. I think this would be a great title for a parent to take into a classroom and build up that mystery element for March's Reading Month. The other one I want to mention is called Music for Mr. Moon. It's written by Philip Stead and illustrated by Aaron Stead. And they're a duo that I think live in northern Michigan at this time.
Sutton's Bay, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. But it's a beautiful book, and it's about a little girl who plays the cello but is really kind of shy, doesn't want to be out there performing in front of people. And a little bit of a dreamy story in that... you know, she ends up tossing out something out the window that knocks the poor moon out of the sky. Oh. And then she pursues the moon, and they kind of become friends. And they kind of have this moment of, like, sharing deep thoughts. Like, well, this is hard for me, and, you know, I really want to do this. And I really, really love this story because it kind of gets to that, you know, a lot of children do face shyness, even maybe a little anxiety about performing or having to learn something and then show it to grandma and auntie and, you know, everyone in the family. And this one just really ends up kind of like giving her a little bit more courage to do well in her chosen, I guess, hobby, you could say, or her chosen art. All right, so we got any JF books, any fiction books out there?
Oh, sure. Let me take a swing at a couple here. I was talking about space, you know, because of the 50th anniversary of Apollo. But also lately, there's been a lot of really good books, like featuring STEM concepts, you know, especially as in regards to women and girls. And one I want to draw attention to is by Kate Hannigan. And it's sort of a historical fantasy. It's called Kate, Book One, so it kind of has a title that is kind of hard to understand where she's going with it. But really what it is, it's about three diverse girls living during the early part of World War I in Philadelphia. And they develop superpowers. But part of the story also is that one of them is related to the women who were helping to build the ENIAC computer in Philadelphia at that time. And so, you know, so you've got the superhero aspect. There's even like graphic novel pages in it too. But the part I really appreciate is you get all kinds of information about a real life set of women who were computer pioneers, right? And this has excellent crossover to another book that came out last year called Instructions Not Included, How a Team of Women Coded the Future, which is a real life story about these women who appear as fictional characters in this Kate book. So it's just all kinds of fun. And Kate Hannigan doesn't have a lot of books to her credit yet, but she wrote one called about the detective's assistant. About the first female Pinkerton detective who helped Abraham Lincoln get smuggled into Washington in 1861. So I really like that one a lot. And another STEM one is by Deborah Hopkinson, How He Became a Spy, A Mystery of World War II London. And this gets you into the code breakers who were working in London at the time. So it's all about cryptology and mathematics. And these, and I'm horrible at arithmetic, and even arithmetic, let alone mathematics. But they really have an appreciation for this kind of stuff that even somebody like me can really get into and start enjoying. So both of those, and Deborah Hopkinson has written a just all kinds of historical fiction books for kids, especially picture book length ones. So she's an author I really, really, really admire. So that one's worth a big look. So those are the ones I wanted to mention.
Yeah, so I have a couple of nonfiction books I really loved from last year. The first one, I don't even know how much I need to say about it, because probably all I need to say is it's about Mr. Rogers.
Yay!
So this is actually a picture book. It's called You Are My Friend, but it's a biography on Fred Rogers, and it is it's just a lovely book. It's really inspirational, because it just tells the story of this wonderful man who was such a friend to children. But I love the illustrations in this book, because I feel like they reflect Fred Rogers. They're just very simple, pencil and watercolor. And I love that it starts off with Freddie Rogers as a little kid and talks about some of the challenges that he faced. I mean, I feel like we've all probably seen the documentary and the movie starring Tom Hanks, but so we're probably familiar with his story. But yeah, he struggled, and he really used those early struggles to fuel his compassion and empathy for children as an adult. And yeah, so this book is just, it's so lovely. It brought me so much joy, although I feel like I should confess I am sort of obsessed with Mr. Rogers, and I did grow up watching his show, so... But yeah, I feel like this book is great for people who are familiar with him and people who, kids who aren't, so.
Oh, Matt Phelan illustrations too, very good, yeah.
Yeah, just they're so beautiful and simple. So yeah, and there's also a bibliography list of titles at the back of this book for kids who want more.
Okay.
So yeah, another one that I absolutely loved is, it's a chapter book memoir, and I would recommend it for probably grades 6 and up. And it's so great. The title is Funny, You Don't Look Autistic, A Comedian's Guide to Life on the Spectrum. And I loved this book. It's written by Michael McCreary, who, let's see if I can get this out. He is a Canadian stand-up comedian.
All right.
So, yeah, and I don't know. It just, the idea of this book grabbed me, because you wouldn't necessarily think that comedy and autism go together, but, and I'm going to quote something from his intro. He says, comedy is all about breaking the ice on topics that people are too scared to talk about. And I just love that. And my favorite thing about this book is I would almost call it sneakily instructive, because he has you laughing the entire way talking about his life on the spectrum, but you're learning so much about, like, through his experience,
sure.
Basically. So, yeah, just a great book.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I have one J fiction book that I really liked. It's called A Wolf Called Wander. It's by Roseanne Perry. And I actually listened to the audio version narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Wow, this is just a fantastic, simple, quick story about a wolf named Swift. And this is a wolf who gets separated from his family. Actually, quite a few of his family members die. and he is just on the run because he is being pursued by a rival pack. And this story is just, it's so gorgeous. It's what I would say kind of like an action-packed sort of book. Mm. There's a lot of detail about the landscapes, the forests, the prairies, the wildflowers. But there's also a strong sense of how brutal, like, the animal instinct can be for survival, how wolves are. So in some sense, there is violence about the natural world, in its natural way. But I really like, because I listened to it, I mean, the smells and the scents that really I was like imagining while I was listening to this book were just so incredible about, you know, you learn so much about the wolf species and how they survive and how they interact with each other. I also want to mention that this book was based on a real life story, actually, of a wolf that had been tracked by scientists electronically. And the wolf, his name was
OR7 is what his official name was. He had traveled over 1,000 miles across the Pacific Northwest. So I would say it's kind of like right between the 4 to 6 reading level. It could appeal to a reluctant reader, but especially for someone who is an animal lover really interested in learning about animal habitats, this would be a great book.
This would be a good match for like Julia the Wolves by Jean Craig and George, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
And even if somebody wanted like a younger Call of the Wild,
brought to mind like Pax, I think it's Sarah Pennypacker.
Oh, yeah.
Was a great
that
book,
Fox
too.
One. Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Can I do one more Jay nonfiction?
Now go for it.
Before we move on from Jay. This is absolutely one of my favorite books in the last few years, and it's about Watergate. Now, this may not seem like a big, exciting topic. And just picking the book up, I was thinking, well, okay, I lived through Watergate. Like, I was in third, fourth, fifth grade when it was all breaking. We were just buried in Watergate stuff all the time. I mean, media was not what it is now, where you're, seeing it 24 hours a day, but still, you couldn't get away from it. But this book's called Bringing Down a President, Andrea Ballas and Elizabeth Levy. And what it does, it encapsulates the whole Watergate scandal. It's probably about 200 pages, maybe a little over that. But you know all the players, the essence of what went on, who did what to whom and when. You get the most famous quotes from the time, you get the when did the president know, or what did the president know, and when did he know it. You learn about where the phrase the smoking gun came from, and it's all in just this really readable, digestible, fascinating format. And it's well illustrated too, so you're not just talking. Blocks of text. Now, one caveat: even though it's a J, there is some pretty salty language in it because you do have some of the tapes from Nixon's White House tapes, and you know how they talked. All right, so one caveat, but other than that, do try this. Even for adults, it's great.
Okay, all right. So moving on to YA, we have a few minutes. We want to talk a little bit about some young adult titles. Anyone got anything?
Pumpkinheads by Rainbow Rowell.
This
book is, it's a graphic novel, but it's set in modern day, but it's just a heartwarming, charming story about two friends who have worked in this pumpkin patch forever. It's their last summer, it's their last fall season before they go away to college. So it's kind of wistful and nostalgic, but it's also about love breaking out where you wouldn't expect it. It's just the sweetest story, but it's all, it has modern issues in there too. We have LGBT characters and things like that, but it doesn't overwhelm the storyline. They're just there, So just a sweet, beautiful book. I really like this one a lot.
Yeah, so one of my favorites was from last year was William Shakespeare's Hamlet, a graphic novel for teens. And so I don't read a lot of graphic novels, but this one literally caught my eye. Like, the cover is amazing. It's Hamlet holding a sword in front of his face. It's very dark and gritty. And it caught my eye. I also am a huge fan of Shakespeare, and Hamlet is my favorite of his plays. And let me tell you what, I wish this had been around when I was in high school. Because I didn't discover that I actually liked Shakespeare until college. And I think I would have realized how much I loved it had I had something like this book in high school.
But high school students, if you're supposed to read the whole book, don't listen. Don't listen.
Yes. Don't read anything abridged either.
True. But yeah, this adaptation is so interesting to me. It's the familiar and famous story of Hamlet, the Prince of Denmark. And probably one of my favorite things about this adaptation is that it does shorten and edit the original text, although, of course, the famous soliloquy, to be or not to be, is in there in its entirety.
Awesome.
Yeah. But while it does shorten and edit a lot of the text, it still manages to capture the themes and the atmosphere of the play, which I think is such an interesting balancing act. Yeah, and it even modernizes the language a little bit, but you'll still find a lot of the classic language in there.
So are they, so are they using direct Shakespearean when they're speaking, and then the narrative is in modern English?
Well, it's both, really. It's like a mixture, which I think is really fun. Yeah. It also this book starts off with a short biography about Shakespeare, and it also has a character glossary, which I found really, really fun. Although the illustrator, Naresh Kumar, did such a great job differentiating between the characters using, you know, hairstyles, costumes, even body language. I don't read a lot of graphic novels, and I never got lost or confused. I really recommend this one for people who are familiar with the play and also people who are, you know, just discovering it.
Okay. So I've got a couple of slice of life stories. Those are kind of my favorite teen fiction sort of stories. One of them is called The Field Guide to the North American Teenager by Ben Philippe. And it's actually about, it's a high school story. And I will say, if I can't say too much about it, definitely read chapter 3. It is so funny. It is like movie hilarious, but even funnier reading it. It just reminded me of a teen flick in some ways. But this really appealed to me because it's about a black French-Canadian teen boy who gets moved to Austin, the suburbs of Austin, Texas.
Wow.
And it's his mother. His parents are divorced, and his mother gets a professorship job. But it's like a lot of snark and wit and just storyline that kind of examines his own assumptions about what he thinks Americans are like. And also just the idea of, like, you know, that over that story about what it's like to have a bunch of drama going on in your high school story and trying to still come out friends at the end. The other one I'm going to mention quickly is called Michigan versus the Boys. This is by Carrie Allen. Hockey fans, listen up. This is about a girl who is determined to play hockey, even if her school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan decides to cut the sport. And really, the real story in this item is about sexual assault and about a young girl deciding to stand up for herself and not only demand her right to be able to play hockey so that she can secure a spot in her college years, but also just about not staying quiet in order to not rifle, I guess, the waves. The character's name is Michigan, and it is set in Michigan, although I can't say for sure that there was a whole lot of UP-ishness to it. Those are my picks. All right, well, that's all we have. Thank you, Tom and Lindsay, for joining me today. We want to wish everyone a happy new year and happy 2020 reading.
Thank you.
Absolutely.